supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Sometime in the next decade, astronauts may once again travel to the moon. Let's take one small step at a time on SkyTalk with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. So, Derek, what does NASA have in mind?
Well, NASA now has in mind a very large departure from its efforts in the past several presidential administrations to really restart the process of using the moon as a new base of operation for further exploration of the solar system. However, right now, this is all contained in the proposed 2020 budget. But of that $21 billion, not all of it is slated to go towards developing the moon as a jumping-off point for further exploration. There's still all the other NASA programs and projects that have to be managed under that budget as well.
It's not as quick a jump-off as when we were there in the 1970s. They're anticipating 2-week-long stays.
Yes, indeed. They are anticipating by 2028 that the first people to go to the moon will stay for a considerably longer period of time. The astronauts who left the moon in 1972 on Apollo 17, they only spent 2.5 days on the moon, although they accomplished a lot. So 2 weeks is a considerably longer period of time. But what it's going to require is that there's a tremendous amount of infrastructure and systems development that has to take place before we can get to that point some 10 years from now. And that includes the development and construction of a sort of mini space station that would orbit the moon, that would act as a staging point between the Earth, International Space Station, the Lunar Space Station that they're calling Gateway, by the way, and actually going down to the surface of the moon itself. And in the meantime, there are also some things that this budget proposes to cut that are actually quite significant.
For example?
So the biggest one in my mind is NASA's STEM engagement, what they used to call the Office of Education. As far as I'm concerned, this is a critical piece of what NASA does. It doesn't really take a lot of money to do this, but the Office of Education is that group that makes sure that everyone around the country, particularly school students, understand what NASA's mission and purpose is, and they provide a tremendous amount of education materials that help students think about the possibility of becoming part of the space exploration world in the future.
Many of us can still summon the images of those iconic footprints when astronauts did trod on the moon. What we learn in the interim is maybe they should have also brought skis. Who knew then that there was ice?
In fact, it might become part of the astronaut kit that skis could be useful at some point when we go back to occupy the moon on a more permanent basis because of the fact that we've been able to identify that there is liquid water ice frozen into some of the craters on the moon at the poles that are in perpetual shadow. But this is just one of those discoveries about our solar system. Now we're learning that there are dust rings and asteroids along the orbital paths of the planets Mercury and Venus. What we didn't realize before is that the gravitational pull of these planets actually will amass these vast dust rings that occupy the orbits. So Venus, for example, there's a dust ring that's 16 million miles tall and 6 million miles wide. Originally, scientists thought that this stuff would have been blown out of the solar system when the solar system first formed. But what we're beginning to learn is that it seems as if there are probably asteroids that are traveling along in the orbit of Venus that sort of abrade themselves over time, creating these great dust clouds that now float along with the planet. So we're learning yet how our solar system is teaching us new things almost every day.
Derek, there's a lot to be observed and learned as the new star party season kicks off.
With spring right around the corner, some astronomy clubs are getting started with their star parties right now. So beginning tonight, the Delaware Valley Amateur Astronomers will host their very first star party of the season at the Model Airplane Flying Field at Valley Forge National Park. So it'll be a great opportunity to get a great look at the moon, get a great look at Mars, and check out what other wonderful stuff is available in the spring sky. So you'll have an opportunity to learn a lot and get a jump on the observing season.
So if this is still technically late winter, when is vernal equinox?
Well, it turns out that vernal equinox this year is next Wednesday, and it comes at 5:58 in the evening, so we'll have one last almost full day of winter before we jump off into spring.
We are noticing more daylight, less dark sky. What is available to be seen overhead?
Lots of great stars. We have the last of the winter constellations moving over toward the western side of the sky, while Leo the Lion, the main constellation of the spring season, is moving into a position about halfway up from the southern horizon by about 9:30 in the evening. And so we have the opportunity to bridge two seasons of constellations as we make our way forward. And then around in the morning sky at 5:30 to 5:45, we can see still three brilliant planets, Jupiter, Saturn, and Venus. But we're slowly losing Venus, more so to the brightening sunrise sky than to Venus's motion itself. Last chance to catch Venus.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Sky Talk.